Hello, everyone. Welcome to episode 77 of Audacious Food Talk for Gluttons. This is Janae Libby. Would like to thank a couple of sponsors. Thank you to Teej.fm, that is TEEJ.fm. WTJU has created a brand new podcast collaborative community. I am proud to be a part of it. So far, I'm the only community. The rest is made up of UVA students who are trying their hand out at podcasting. There are so many great episodes and so many great shows over at Teej.fm. Check them out. And thanks to TJU for allowing me to be a part of it. Thanks also to Patreon.com. Patreon is a wonderful service allowing artists and creators to continue to do what they do for as little as a dollar a month. You can ensure that artists like myself can continue to create and remain solvent. Check out patreon.com/audaciouspod. Great episode today, guys. We're talking whiskey. Welcome to episode 77. Here we go. Hey there. Welcome to episode 77 of Audacious Food Talk for Gluttons, where food is just the starting point for many, many deeper conversations on life, love, success, the nature of success. Why are we even here on this earth? What is our purpose and why are we here? We talk about it all here at Audacious. And thank you for being my guest today on this episode all about whiskey. Whiskey without the E. This is single malt stuff, guys. You might call it scotch. I call it whiskey because that's what they call it in Scotland. It's not Irish whiskey. It's not American bourbon. This is American whiskey without the E. And today's guests, Marlene Steiner and Ian Thomas over at the Virginia Distillery Company in Lovingston, teach us all about it. It's a twofer. We're going to talk to brand director Marlene first about all of the community initiatives that the distillery company has put forth to be a part of the Lovingston community, the Nelson County community, as well as all of the great events and things happening down at the Virginia Distillery Company. It's a beautiful facility. Everyone there is so friendly. Going there is quite the whiskey experience. They even have a tour. And after talking with Marlene, we're going to talk to master distiller and distillery director Ian Thomas. Mr. Thomas and I, or is it me? No, Mr. Thomas, that's correct. Mr. Thomas and I geek out over how to make whiskey. What is involved in this very long an arduous process of creating this nectar of the gods. I am a whiskey connoisseur, an enthusiast. I have been to Scotland. I lived in Scotland. I have toured numerous distilleries. I have my favorite brands. I'm a Talisker woman. I'm a Dalwhinnie woman. Yeah, they're very different if you know your whiskeys. Sometimes I'm in the mood for a peppery. Sometimes I'm in the mood for a heathery. And each whiskey tastes different. Each has its own notes. Whiskey has terroir. And today we geek out about whiskey here at Audacious. You can find me on iTunes. The website is audacious.co. I talk with folks who do the work of food. I got sick of folks focusing. Oh my God, really? I got sick of people focusing on the finished product, the pretty Instagrammed plate. I decided I wanted to learn the stories of the people doing the work of food in our region to find out why they are audacious about what they do. And both Marlene and Ian are certainly audacious, and we are so glad to have them on the show today. And as you know, this is the part of the podcast where I delve into what's happening locally, food-wise, what's happening with me, what's on my mind, because I want to let you guys know where I'm coming from. Listeners in California, I want you to stay aware of what's going on back here in Charlottesville. We've got certain folks coming back on August the 12th. They were here. They protested. We protested back. it wasn't as peaceful as it could have been. If you don't know what I'm talking about, just search August the 12th in Charlottesville and you will see what comes up. I don't want to give them any more press than they have been allowed by right. I do believe in no censorship, but I also believe in inclusion. Hate speech is not allowed here at Audacious. It's not allowed in Charlottesville. We are an inclusive environment, an inclusive region, and my mission here at Audacious is to keep it inclusive and to include everyone at the table. So I only bring up August 12th because I'm wondering, are there food-related resistance events happening? If so, send them my way. Let me know on Facebook. At Audacious Pod is my Twitter handle. You can send me an email at contact@audacious.co. I want to know, are there food-related resistance events happening? Hell, are there any resistance events happening? I'm sure there's a ton. Send them my way. I will do my best to promote them. We want to promote inclusion here at Audacious. And so as part of that, send me your events. I've got a couple of recommendations. Food-wise here, things that I have enjoyed immensely recently. Went to the Shack a few weeks ago for the hubby's birthday. Chef Ian Bowden, as always, treated us like royalty. We were wined and dined. Not 69. You know, Ian, you know I can joke with you. It's a triumvirate, right? If you say wine, dine, 69, it kind of goes all three. So here's me being silly and irreverent, as so many of you say that you like about Audacious. But we were wined and dined at the Shack. The food was fantastic. The liver mousse was outstanding. The head cheese, the crispy head cheese, if you have never had that, I would urge you to try it. Just try it. It's amazing. It's crunchy. The inside tastes like a really good sausage. Has the kind of the texture of bologna with that little gaminess that head cheese has. It's fantastic. What else did we have? Oh my God, a beautiful pasta dish with pulled rabbit. Sweet and cheesy and creamy. We sat out on the patio. We had some lovely Foggy Ridge cider. We had a beautiful dessert, a summer evening for the ages. Thank you, Chef Ian Bowden at the Shack, for treating us so well. I just got some Gearhart's beer-infused chocolate. Tim Gearhart, if you listened to the episode a few weeks ago, he has worked with Virginia Breweries to infuse chocolate into four different types of beer. From Hampton Roads, from Richmond, Hardywood, Champion, Devil's Backbone, and a lovely brewery from Hampton Roads whose name escapes me. I'm so sorry. I'm not familiar with that part of the state as I should be, but I will mention it on the next episode once I remember what the name is. Try those beer-infused chocolates at Gearhart's. And just today, I was at JM Stock, JM Stock Provisions on Main Street. If you've been in there, you know that they are kings of sausage. They have meats, they have cheeses, they have beer. But the sausage selection, they make it all in-house, of course, is fantastic. I picked up a Basque sausage and a Cerdito sausage, and we will be grilling those up here this weekend. I'm so excited to try them. It was very hard to choose. They had about 8 different varieties. I'll be talking with the JM Stock boys very soon. Met Matt today. We worked out a time. Fabulous stuff, guys. Go get into JM Stock as soon as you can, right there on Main Street. They also have an outpost in Richmond, if you're in Richmond. And let's get to whiskey, shall we? I'm eager to hear this episode again because, as I've told you, I'm a whiskey fanatic. I love it. And Marlene and Ian Thomas Marlene Steiner and Ian Thomas of Virginia Distillery Company tell us about all things whiskey. I met with Amanda and Emma, who work at the distillery afterwards. They are interested in producing a distillery podcast. So who knows? That could be in the near future. And maybe I'll even have them guest host here for short segments about whiskey in the future. Do you think that's a good idea? Let me know. And enjoy this episode. I'll see you on the flip side. Thank you so much for taking time out of your busy day to talk with me.
I'm happy to do it. I'm so happy about this. I you know, Marlene told me about this opportunity, and I feel like what's great about this is it not only gives us an opportunity to tell a little bit more about what's going on day to day here, but kind of educate on, you know, the new American single malt category.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. And we just took a tour of the distillery from start to finish, the process, because it is a very long process. And I have to say, I had a lot of favorite parts, but walking into that cask room and just being hit by this wall of scent of aging whiskey, and you could almost, I opened my mouth, you could almost feel it in your throat. It's so thick there.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
What happens to you when you walk in that building?
I don't want to leave.
Yeah.
it's one of my favorite spots here on site. You know, in the middle of the summer, it stays fairly cool. And and in the dead of winter, it's certainly not freezing in there. A couple of, you know, things. It's kind of a, I get this great emotional response. You know, there's something about this industry where it's not quite instant gratification. You have to have a good bit of patience in making whiskey. A lot of patience in making whiskey, good whiskey. But there's something about walking into a space like that and seeing, you know, a sea of, you know, 700 to 800 casks and kind of just in resting and waiting. And although it's not quite in a bottle and it's not quite, you know, there yet, there is some gratification in seeing kind of the labor there. That's
sure.
You know,
you can see all the effort and work and time that went into it,
And getting and hearing and getting the reactions from, you know, visitors and guests and you know, just everyone about the scent, and it's just an amazing spot. It just it fills me with joy. It's great to hear that, because we're not quite yet to putting it in a bottle, but it's still good to hear those reactions.
It's going to happen. That's going to be a big day.
It's going to be a huge day.
Yeah, I will be here for that.
Good. We will send you a memo. We'll let everyone know. We want to make it a kind of a grand event. You know, it's going to be very exciting.
Well, and you talked me through the process, and there's a lot of science behind it, but I'm curious, who makes the final call, this is ready for bottling? Like, whose palate? Like, who? Like, how do you know?
So there's a couple of different approaches that a lot of industry folks take. There are master distillers, and there are, you know, mash men, and then there are master blenders, and all kinds of, you know, there are folks with a sommelier background and very, you know, acute sensory analysis training. The approach that we've taken to this point is it's twofold. It's educating ourselves, so learning more about sensory analysis, learning more about how you train your palate, how you train your nose to catch very nuanced notes of either faults or value added components that. That you want in the whiskey. So it's twofold in that we train ourselves with those components, and we also take a very kind of, you know, in the fold, wide open approach where, you know, our tasting panel involves, you know, folks in the brand department, it involves folks in the production department, it involves folks on the corporate side, even those that work in the visitor center as guest experience managers. We try and gather as much information as we can about the likes, the dislikes, you know, what people's palates are picking up in that process. And from there, it is kind of a scientific, you know, we take that data. We reference it, you know, half the time I spend on the production floor, and then the other half the time I spend on Excel, Microsoft Excel.
Oh, yeah.
And so it's extracting data, it's seeing where things correlate, and then putting that data to good use. And so from there, we build prototypes of what we think might be beneficial blends, or you know, an approach to blending our Virginia Highland Whiskey or Virginia Single Malt. The panel tastes those blends and then fills out a score sheet and comment card, and I collect that data and see where the correlations lie.
And that brings up a question I had, because there are definitely two different camps when it comes to Scotch whiskey, or whiskey without an E. Have your single malt aficionados, and then you have folks who like blends, who think the blend is king. You know, it takes more talent to blend a perfect whiskey.
That's right.
Especially in Scotland. I know when I would go there and talk about single malts, they would look at me like, Philistine, come on. Blends are better. Blends are better.
It's two different schools of thought. There is very much a talent to blending, and not only blending, but blending consistently. You know, there's a couple of different approaches that folks take to, you know, maintaining consistency throughout that blending process. But there's also something to be said, I think, about you know, that pureness and true, you know, forefront of you know, single malt, and it's not a blend of you know, different products, essentially.
Sure, it's just its own thing.
It's just a two-row barley whiskey.
Sure.
But again, it's two different schools of thought, and you know, neither one, I think, has. They both have very different, but very unique, and you know, requiring their own type of talent portions to them. Here we're very much, you know, purists.
Right. Well, and I applaud you for it, because it's not easy. And whiskey, single malt, there's a lot of terroir to it. It's very similar to wine. So the whiskey that will be produced out of these casks will be Virginia whiskey, right?
Very, very, very much so. It you know, it boils down to, you know, your raw materials and your water. Mostly, you know, we're very, very, you know, lucky to have a water source that we have. We test it on a regular basis, and make sure that the mineral content is not changing. Make sure our pH is not changing.
And what is that water? Where does that come from?
This is groundwater. So
we've
drilled a well here on site.
Whoa.
And we are drawing well water.
Yeah.
Right out of the ground, out of the aquifer that's below us. And so we have that water tested very, very regularly to make sure there are no major changes going on. And if there are, you know, there are pivots in place where we, you know, we can run softeners or filters to get us back to kind of square one with where we began with the water source. But speaking to that terroir, it's the water, it's your raw materials, your grain, and very much the climate.
Sure.
You know, here in Virginia, the climate is very different than climate that you see, you know, deep in the south or farther north, you know, even in the southwest or the northwest.
Yeah. And different from Scotland.
We see, you know, today is around 90 degrees, maybe a little hotter, and a good bit of humidity outside.
Yeah.
You know, this past winter we saw a couple of weeks where we were, you know, single digits, and it was very, very, very cold, below freezing. But that plays very much to the terroir of you know, our single malt and what we're producing here as well. And we're trying to take advantage of all of those elements and really let those show through in the final product.
Well, and I'm guessing that, like, the casks resting in the cask house, I mean, the wood breathes, the barrels breathe. It's, you know, it's a living, fermenting process. But I bet the temperature here might affect that a little bit, even though I'm sure you keep it at a certain range.
We encourage the temperature change.
Oh.
We very much want those elements, especially the climate, to influence the terroir of our whiskey and influence the outcome of what's going on. And you're right, a cask is very much a living, breathing thing. It's you know, wood is porous and it breathes, it expands and contracts as climate, you know, heats and cools.
Sure.
And as it expands and contracts, you know, that spirit moves in and out of the wood. And humidity has a large effect on the maturation process. So one approach that we've taken is if we are very much wanting our climate to influence our whiskey and very much own Virginia single malt, we've gone so far as to install climate data sensors in our warehouses at various points too. So we can see how the whiskey maturates. And so that, again, I live half my life is on production and half my life is in Excel. And so that combined with those sensory analyses of the whiskey and kind of the maturation process, we can see where that data correlates. So in the warehouse, if we find casks that tend to, you know, age or mature in better areas, higher in the warehouse, lower in the warehouse, in the middle tier, in a more humid section and a less humid section, we can see that data on a spreadsheet and really start to learn the effects of the climate and maybe hone those a little bit better to the maturation process of Virginia single malt.
Do the barrels ever get rotated, like moved? Oh, a little humid here, maybe move it over here where it's cooler.
So that is another technique used in the maturation process. We do not currently do that because we don't have enough information. Don't have enough information yet. We are hoping that throughout this range of you know, climates that we see and throughout this maturation process that, you know, in 3 to 4 years we will see a fully matured you know, deep bodied single malt whiskey. And once we have that in place and we're comfortable with it, and we begin to put that out to market and see the response, then we can really start to look at how that data correlates with the maturation process.
Another exciting thing to look forward to.
It's very exciting. That's right. And it's funny. Again, there's a lot of patience in the process of making whiskey, but we're very much you know, set on our vision is very much set, you know, two to three years down the road, almost on a day-to-day basis. It's an interesting outlook to have.
To have that date. What is it? I heard Melanie or Marlene. I keep wanting to call her Melanie. April 2019. About
around there. Yeah, around there.
My birthday's in April. If you wanted to do it on the 27th, that wouldn't be bad.
Okay, it could be. But it's very much a you know, day at a time. But with a, you know, 2 to 3 year foresight in place type situation, which is there's not a lot of businesses out there that and not even businesses, but, you know, even within the spirits industry, there brown spirits are unique in that aspect, that what you do today, you really won't be handling or working with directly in blending or bottling you know, for you know, three to four years, especially in our category in regards to a single malt or a true whiskey. And so it's interesting to kind of, you know, go through that process of raw material procurement and you know, forecasting and seeing what that looks like.
Do you have a favorite part of the process or of the day that you look forward to? Because there's a lot of steps.
It's all of it, really. You know, again, with this instant gratification and you know, trying to find some patience throughout this whole process, one thing that I really enjoy is, and even with my background in yeast, is the fermentation process. I'm very much, excited to step out of my car in the mornings, and if the production crew is mashed in already, you can smell an air of fresh mash, fresh malt right in the parking lot. And I know not long after that I can walk inside and the fermentations are going, and
that's so cool.
And while we were downstairs, we opened up a washback, and you get that air of pineapple and pear and crisp apple and citrus and those fruit essences. That's to me very much a not only are those the targets that we're hitting, but it's just an instant gratification where we know we're managing that process correctly, and
yeah.
It's a beautiful smell, and that's probably one of my favorite parts of
yeah.
the day.
And I gotta
especially first thing in the morning.
Oh yeah, it's like you get to work and you go, oh, yes, it
yeah,
smells
it's
great.
Like a cup of coffee,
right, to get you going.
Yeah.
And I gotta ask, your background is in yeast.
It is.
Tell me a little bit about yourself. Like, where are you from, and what does that mean?
Yeah. So yeah, that's an interesting tagline. My background's in yeast.
Yeah.
So I'm from Memphis, Tennessee.
Oh wow!
And my
it's
wife
a great
and I
town.
Are both from Memphis, and I spent 4 years in college in Knoxville at the University of Tennessee, studied biology, came back to Memphis and began working for Lalemand. So Lalemand is a very large manufacturer of yeast. They have a different kind of bio divisions, animal nutrition, maybe biomedical, but a very, very large company. I think it was started and based originally out of Germany, perhaps, but I know there's a very, very large division in Canada, in North America. But there was a plant in Memphis, and so with my biology background, I helped set up a pathogen lab, so kind of quality control, quality assurance. So as yeast was produced and manufactured, I ensured the quality of it through checks for salmonella, for E. coli, microbes. Making sure that
I didn't even know that job existed. That's so interesting.
So making sure that because yeast is a consumable. It's not just used for making whiskey. Not all the time. And even then, if it is, you'd rather have clean yeast than yeast that has E. coli or salmonella or listeria. So, anyways, I helped set up that pathogen lab and helped kind of build the quality control program for that division in Memphis. And then I had an opportunity to help start a small micro distillery in Memphis called Big River Distilling Company. So I left Lalemand, and my loving wife, God bless her, supported me through the whole thing, and helped them get up and running with their processes. And then kind of just wanted to take a deep dive in the industry and started thinking about consulting and reaching out to all kinds of various industry members, not only locally, but regionally, and seeing what opportunities were out there. So eventually reached out to do some consulting work here for the Virginia Distillery Company, and Gareth reached back out to me, and between a few conversations and trips back and forth, they offered me a position here, and my wife and I said, there's not too many times in your life that you get to kind of take a leap of faith and jump to something like this.
Sure, sure.
And so very graciously I accepted, I've been here ever since.
Yeah, terrific. That's so cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, the team here is amazing. Like, every time I visit, I'm struck by that. Like, you can see the interest and passion in everyone's eyes. It's not like, oh, here's your whiskey. Or like you get at some tasting rooms at wineries.
Yeah.
Everybody is very excited.
It's, I don't know if it's trickle down or if it's we're all deeply rooted in our passion for the industry, but from Gareth, our CEO, to Marlene and Amanda and everyone in the visitor center, from the guest experience leaders to those that are, you know, serving cocktails and really interacting with the guests, to, you know, to everyone here on the production floor, and my gosh, the sales team too, with Kate, her new crew, you know, there's just so much passion in everything that we're doing. And it's so unique too, because we're in this category that's not quite defined, but, you know, we believe there's definition to it.
Yeah.
And it's across everybody. It's across all the departments, here. And so, but you're right. There's a lot of passion here.
Yeah. Well, cause there aren't, are there other distilleries doing single malts? Are you guys?
So there are, there are other distilleries, just regionally here. A great example is, Wasmans.
Okay. Yeah.
You know, there's other single malt category winners, Balcones, there's St. George, I think, maybe in Florida.
They're
single malts by the TTB definition, or not single malts, but excuse me, malt whiskeys.
Malt whiskey, okay.
And so we're working hard with the American Single Malt Commission, as kind of a part of that commission, to drive home this, you know, defining category of American single malt. It's currently not in the TTB regulations of class and category.
And TTB?
Excuse me, the Tax and Trade Bureau.
Ah, gotcha.
The very omnipotent, you know, hand of the federal government.
That, makes the definition.
Regulates everything.
Sure.
You know, they've worked hard with industry members to kind of, you know, gain feedback from us and learn how they can help, you know, speed up process times, work with us on COLAs or certificate of label approvals, all kinds of different things. And so we're really striving to help push this category of American single malt and get it defined and really, for a couple of reasons. You know, as a consumer, you always want to know what it is that you're purchasing. Mm-hmm. It's not, some of it's about the brand and marketing, but it's also very much about, you know, knowing truly, well, if this is a single malt, then there should be nothing blended in with it. There should, the grain bill should be malted barley, 100%, not just 51% malted barley.
Yes.
So there are
cut
some
corners.
Right, and there are some you know, hurdles that we have to jump there, but we've got a strong push towards, you know, getting that category defined, and we want to, you know, and we are, we're trying very hard every day to kind of preach that and educate the consumers on the new category and what we're doing, which is very, very different than just strictly a malt whiskey.
Well, and as you said on the tour, you're not just shipping over whiskey and sticking it in barrels and saying, "Oh, look here, we made this." You're actually developing it here from water here, from grain here.
That's right. That's absolutely right.
All here, local whiskey.
That's absolutely right. Virginia single malt whiskey. Yes. It is very much a Virginia whiskey.
Without an E.
Without an E.
And why is that important for, I know why, but the listeners may not know why. And I know there's a lot of educational component to this too.
Well, you know, to us, bourbon is kind of a swear word. And really defining the difference between those categories or those types of whiskeys. There's all kinds of history behind whiskey with an E and whiskey without an E. Going all the way back to the first, you know, references of whiskey in Scotland. I'm terrible with the pronunciation. Whiskabay, I think, is how you pronounce
it. That sounds about right.
It's to us, it's, you know, it's who we are, and we're rooted in that tradition. Not only in the way we talk about our equipment and the vocabulary and the process. but also in kind of owning it and making it ours and establishing, you know, our processes here stateside as an American whiskey. So it's a blend of old world meets new world, and kind of our spin on it.
Yeah, there you go. And it's good stuff too. What I've had is
amazing. Thank you.
What do you enjoy doing when you're not making whiskey on your spare time?
I don't have much spare time. I've got a 6-month little girl at
you
home.
You don't have any spare time.
I don't.
Oh, congratulations.
Thank you. Isabella Rose Thomas.
Oh.
Born December 27th.
Christmas baby.
Christmas baby.
Yeah.
She's going to hate it later in life with birthdays. But
she will.
My time is filled with probably some of the, you know, I couldn't ask for more in life than coming to a place like this to work every day and then going home to a beautiful family and, you know, spending as much time with them as possible. And then having a loving, supportive wife that, you know, lets me do crazy things like quit my job in Memphis and build a distillery and then move us to Virginia, you know. It's amazing. But not too much spare time. I love getting involved with kind of the other industry members, whether it's the breweries or the vineyards and wineries. Not only working with them here at the distillery and on kind of collaborative projects, but I'm just going to visit and see, you know, how, you know, the life of a winemaker is, and you know, taking time to speak to them and enjoy their labor of love and their hard work.
Yeah.
It's a beautiful setting here, and we get out whenever, you know, we get out whenever we can to visit those folks and, you know, just take some time to ourselves and just be outdoors.
Yeah, terrific.
Know? Yeah.
Right. Well, this has been amazing. I haven't had so much fun in I don't know how long.
Good. I'm so glad.
Distilleries are my favorite thing. All right. Got a couple of speed round questions to end.
Let's do it. Yeah.
All right. You're on a road trip and you've got $5 and you stop for gas. What are you going to buy? Convenience store.
Gas.
You're going to get gas?
We're going to keep going.
Yeah. Oh, you don't. You're one of those. You don't stop.
No.
Snacks, drinks.
Well, no. Snacks and drinks are very important. But I typically pack a picnic wherever I go.
Yeah.
So we might have those in the car. But if we want to get somewhere where we're going, and we get there, and that's fine, and we want to keep going somewhere, I want to make sure there's gas in the car so we can keep going.
There you go. How about? Is there a favorite city in the world where you'd love to go eat? If somebody gave you a free plane ticket right now and said, here, go take a trip. Just to eat. Just for the food.
Guatemala City.
That's a new one. Really?
Yep. My wife's family's from Guatemala. We visited once. I'm waiting for her to take me back. but the food was incredible.
Really?
Breakfasts. Was always amazing. Queso fresca with frijoles, you know, scrambled eggs.
Sure.
But with their twist on it, it was amazing. There's a little restaurant, and really it's kind of more of a coffee shop restaurant in Charlottesville, and the chef is Guatemalan, and I go there every chance I get.
Where?
It's in the, I think it's the Belmont area. Oh, now I'm forgetting the name of it.
La Taza.
Thank you.
He is? I was just there yesterday.
He is. They have a Guatemalan breakfast with plantains, queso fresca.
You're kidding me.
It's only on Sundays, though.
Only on Sundays.
For Sunday brunch.
I'm the food writer and didn't know that. I feel really silly right now. Okay, I'm totally going there. That sounds so good.
It's excellent. And he has his own twist on a couple of other, you know, like omelets and breakfast items or brunch items. He's got nice paninis, but very much a kind of Central American, you know, kick to
nice.
It. It's great. I love it.
Nice. Thanks for the tip. That's awesome. All right, and the last question, and I kind of do this because it's a community based podcast.
Mm-hmm.
I feel this is a community distillery.
Yeah, yeah.
Because you involve the community and use the resources here. Who in the food industry or drink beverage industry should I interview next?
Oh, gosh. Who haven't you interviewed? maybe we should start there.
Right. There's a lot. I've got 75 episodes? So there's a few. Mm-hmm. I'm working my way around, but it's taking a little time. There's so many.
Well, I'll give you a few quickly. Here in Lovingston, we travel into the town a lot and order Vito's. So Vito's, you could go down there, interview them. I'm trying to stick to the food stuff here. I'm trying to think.
Well, and it could be beverage people too, because there's a lot of those. I just talked to Cardinal Point the other day. Oh, I could talk to the chef at La Tazza.
You could talk to the folks at La Tazza, the chef at La Tazza. And there's all these folks on 151, right?
Totally.
The breweries, the wineries.
I just was at Cardinal Point a couple days ago.
So not too far from us, and actually right in our maintenance and site facilities lead, Jordan Kennedy's backyard, is Delphos Winery.
They have a
beautiful setting.
Yeah.
Met the owner a couple of months back, and just it was a treat getting to see, you know, their operation. And they're tucked away in a nice, you know, little hollow, and beautiful, beautiful setting. And they have, they offer a little bit of a kind of a food combo thing on Sundays. I think is when we went, was on Sunday. But it was great. It was great. Delphos would be another great place to interview.
Cool.
That's all I've got offhand.
Yeah, that's a good list. And I haven't done much in this area too. I go up 151 back and forth and here to Lovingston, but I need to hit this area a little more because I've been sticking to town. So those are great.
Yeah.
Yeah. Thank you so much.
You're so welcome. Well, thank you for stopping by. This has been great.
Oh my God. I might become a stalker here just to come in and smell, because whiskey's my thing. Whiskey and beer, but more whiskey. So this has been such a treat for me.
Well, I have to say I'm truly jealous of your time in Scotland. I have, you know, being in the industry and actually, you know, trying to combine, you know, our history and kind of the old world processes with what we do here and in the new world. I have yet to take some time and go to Scotland and actually learn from where, you know, the folks and places of where all this began.
Yeah. Well, when you go, I can tell you where to stay and what to see, because I go back on the regular, and it's a great country.
I'll be calling you shortly to find out, because I am due for a vacation as well.
There you go. Sounds good.
All right.
Thanks a lot.
Janae, thank you so much.
Yeah, great. Starting. I'm never sure which question to start with, but I want to thank you so much for doing this and for talking with me today. I told Ian, whiskey is one of my passions. It just has been since the beginning, and I'm such an enthusiast, and so to come out here and to speak with you was a real treat for me. And on my last visit, you took me through the whiskey tour that here at the distillery, and I have to say, my favorite part was the still. I love that piece of history. And because I don't think that a lot of people realize like spirits and distilling in Virginia is kind of a new thing, but it's not.
Right.
How did you guys get that historical artifact?
So being in Nelson County, we definitely have a lot of close contacts with our friends and neighbors, and this particular still actually did come from a neighbor. It was known as the local Nelson County still for a long time. The neighbor would, you know, kind of loan it out to individuals. And of course, you always wanted to travel with it in sort of separate pieces. So it was never considered a functioning still.
Right.
So his only ask was when he loaned it out was like, oh, just give me some of whatever you're making. So of course we keep the actual donor somewhat private.
Sure.
Because of that.
Sure.
But it's been a fun piece for us to be able to talk about a very local part of Nelson County history, especially as it relates to the sort of distilling. And I have spoke to our ABC officer recently, and there's definitely a lot of active stills in the hills still.
Oh, yeah.
In this part of the you know, country. So
yeah.
So that's always interesting too, because we do get people that come through. It's like, oh yeah, that kind of looks familiar. You know, I've seen these types of operations before. So yeah, it's just fun for us to be able to incorporate that piece of really. I mean, it's history that sort of has evolved. Obviously, we make spirits legally, which you know, it's nice to kind of see the regulations that have changed over the years, because Nelson County was actually a dry county for a long time.
It was?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. So that was what changed actually was Hurricane Camille, which of course devastated this area. And especially here in Eads Hollow, it was, we were pretty, I mean, it was a real tragedy that a lot of people don't know. I guess outside of the county, it's not as I guess known, but so the county ended up after that, because it did really kind of change the geography of Nelson County. And so they were looking for ways that if they're not producing agriculture, what other ways can we kind of incorporate you know, more industry? So they actually changed from a dry county to a wet county sort of post Camille. So that's been a more of a recent addition.
So because Camille devastated the area, like with the flooding, mm-hmm. it changed the way they did agriculture. That's insane.
Yeah. Yeah, it's crazy.
See, and my first thought is, oh my God, we just had a hurricane. We need to start drinking.
Right,
like,
right.
Yeah, still.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Like, yeah, yeah. And there was definitely, that's not to say there wasn't, you know, sort of illegal, you know, occurrences going on. I know they used to have like shot houses so people could kind of, you know, still, of course, the spirit coming from whatever people were making locally. But I think from a, you know, kind of a more formal approach, obviously that definitely did change.
Sure.
And one of the reasons that we're able to be in Nelson County now.
Yeah. And my family's from this area in around Rhodes and over on 151. And I can remember my grandfather talking about, I mean, he made dandelion wine, he made cherry wine, but I can remember him talking about the distilling operations in the area. And there's a great movie called Lawless. Mm-hmm. That actually profiles Franklin County and the, I can't remember the guy's name, but the real famous guy that was like the bootleg runner in that county years and years ago. So for listeners that want to learn more about the history of that kind of thing, tie-ins to the community, that's a really important part of VDC. I love the first responders cask that you guys developed. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, so of course that, we were just really happy to kind of give a bit of love back to our first responder teams, especially because we had a very personal interaction with all of them. We actually had a forest fire on the backside of our distillery around Thanksgiving of last year. And of course, we make distilled spirits and we age them in wooden casks. So we're sort of the, you know, a bit of a concerned about, you know, any sort of fire activity. And we had so many teams that just local teams that were, you know, on site very, very quickly. I mean, you just think about the amount of energy that these people put in, because they're all volunteers. And so they're spending time away from family and friends. They're so community driven. And we really just were very grateful for that, just their support and obviously everything that they did to help us in those stages. And we thought, well, what better way to sort of give back? We make whiskey and we make good whiskey. And so we actually partnered with Will Traeger over at Traeger Brothers Coffee here in Nelson County. And so we had done this kind of an experimental barrel. It was he did a cold brew coffee in one of our barrels. we took it back and we had the whiskey. This was back in 2015, and we were just thinking, you know, it would be a great way to use a local cask and sort of tie that together with wanting to do something special for our first responder team. So we ended up just doing a dedicated single cask first responders. We sold it starting at the beginning of April, sold out in 2 weeks. We're able to then give the net proceeds, and then we also tacked on a little bit more just to help those local teams out. So Department of Forestry as well was very active in just, you know, making sure everything was good. But it did spawn a bit of a collection for us. So we'll end up doing a charity cask every year.
Nice.
From that. So yeah, it'll be local, you know, sort of locally supported, you know, another charity cask that we will ask the community for input on, you know, this upcoming one. Hey guys, here's a few organizations we're looking at. Get some interaction from the community. There's so many great organizations here in Nelson County that really need funding.
Yes.
And we think that we're, you know, in terms of being able to support the community and really be an integral part of Nelson County, it's important that we do, you know, we are able to kind of give back as much as we can.
Right. So. Right. That's amazing. Like this area having, you know, two devastating, you know, natural disasters, and the community just coming together and helping to, you know, helping you guys make sure the place doesn't burn down.
Yeah.
And then you guys giving back to an area that really needs it.
Yeah.
That maybe doesn't get the donor money and the nonprofit money that Charlottesville does.
Right.
That Richmond does, that, you know, more metropolitan.
Yeah.
Areas do. That's.
Yeah.
Wonderful.
Yeah. Yeah, we definitely are want to be very supportive of Nelson County and our neighbors and our friends here. It's you know, I think the one thing that I took away from the first responders, because we actually ended up doing an event for them so they could come out and just kind of relax for an evening.
Oh, nice.
They have some cocktails. We actually you know, had some food brought in, and one of the captains from the local fire and rescue teams had noticed, he's like, nobody does this for us, and they were just so very appreciative and grateful. And so we, you know, I think through all of the efforts, it's nice to hear that, you know, it is something that we're able to kind of be a positive in, you know, kind of their interactions. And
that's wonderful. What was it like when you found out that there was a fire, literally, like, you know, not even a mile from your place?
Yeah, it was
place.
I mean, I remember it because I was actually home enjoying a really nice bottle of wine, and my husband had he likes to cook, so he had osso buco in the
oh,
oven.
Nice.
So I was about to sit down and have dinner, and I get a call from one of the people on my team, and they were like, oh my gosh, there's a fire on the hillside behind the distillery. And so there's so many things that sort of race through your mind. I actually picked up the phone and called, Gareth, who was in DC at the time, and he's our CEO. And, you know, I know he drove probably, I don't want to say how fast, he was down here in record time, let's just say that. But it was this just crazy when you think about the amount of work we had put into the distillery.
Yeah.
and everything was new, and obviously the whiskey that's aging, and just the entire property. So that's why we're so very grateful for all the support we got, because we, when we couldn't be here, they were. And I
yeah.
think that's important, because they're always first to respond. So
that's
yeah,
wonderful.
But it was kind of a nutty thing. And then also just kind of tracking the progress of the fire.
Yeah.
And our neighbors were definitely very supportive in terms of allowing Department of Forestry on their property to kind of do backburning and kind of get the fire under control. So fortunately, there was no structures burned. You know, it was definitely managed extremely well by the local teams and Department of Forestry.
Oh, that's terrific. Another example, I hear it so much on the podcast, of like the surrounding neighbors in support of the development that's amidst them, like among them. And like, it's almost like the symbiotic relationship, each helping the other. Yeah, of course you can come on my
yeah.
land and do backburning, because we want to save this
yeah.
great business that's helping out our county.
Yeah.
And yeah, I remember I had been here a couple of times, and I was following it too. Like, oh my God, I hope it's okay, because it's so beautiful, and you guys put out such a terrific product.
Yeah. Yeah, it was also timed around Ankeeta Ridge too, when they had I think it was the Mount Pleasant fire was I want to say it was maybe directly before our fire, and I just remember thinking how devastating, because they have vineyards, and that fire came very, very close. So I know Christine and the team at Ankeeta Ridge also, you know, kind of feel the same way we do in terms of just, you know, leaning on those teams. And
And it's not a business you can just say, oh, well, we'll just start again right quick. It's like years. It takes years to get back to that point.
So it's it's also that of just, you know, just seeing all the hard work and energy and, of course, time and money that goes into these operations. And just I don't think we ever thought we would see a fire, certainly not in the first, you know, we were really just, we'd just been open for a year. So to think about that, we had just celebrated our first year in business in early November. So so that's why we definitely are very thankful for all of the teams and their support. Could have gone very differently. So
And another way, I can't remember if I talked about this with Ian or not. You guys are very sustainable in the way that you distill your whiskey, because the grain goes to local farms for as feed. And the waste. Like, could you talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, so we're pretty minimal in terms of what our any sort of waste is actually we do use our draft, which is our spent grain. We work with a local dairy farmer who picks it up, and he uses it for his livestock, and I believe it's Early Dawn.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, so they pick it up, and then any other waste is pretty much minimal. I mean, we don't, we're working more and more to sort of make it as kind of minimal as possible. But even production of like CO2, we're able to funnel it out and sort of get that interaction. Even with the trees are very healthy around here, so it's a natural byproduct of the sort of kind of brewing process that we go through on the front end. So any alcoholic beverage is going to have that component, but our distillery is built to sort of manage that in a very natural way. We were kind of very mindful to do it in a as natural as possible.
It's an extra step. I bet not a lot of distilleries take. That's really nice.
Yeah.
Now, what is your role here at Virginia Distillery, and what's a typical day like for you?
Yeah, that's a good question. So my role is the brand director, and so I am charged with just creating brand awareness, enthusiasm, and loyalty for the brand. Those are kind of the three kind of core functions. I wear a lot of different hats, and my job has sort of changed. And I've been here since March of 2015. Chief Experience Officer Maggie Moore, I oversaw the construction of the Visitor Center. So I could tell you a lot of useless information about, flooring and light fixtures and, electrical outlets and all that fun stuff.
Yeah.
But that was kind of my first big project, was to get that kind of up and running. And then also, of course, staff the team that's there, and sort of instill, for us, we talk about quality of product and quality of experience. It's extremely important to us that people, when they're here, you know, there's this sort of hospitality element, and it's just something that's sort of in our veins. I mean, we don't, we put a lot of time and energy into making sure that people are comfortable and they're enjoying themselves here, because it really speaks to just the brand experience as a whole. And so I do a lot of just kind of thinking about the consumer experience, whether it's here on site. We're actually launching quite a few markets outside of Virginia, so we've been thinking about how that translates to any guests that are in Boston or Chicago. There's a lot of just planning about how to just, you know, people pick up a bottle of our whiskey, and we think the product is great. So it's all these other items that really, just get people to kind of think about us more as just kind of a, I had that once and it was fine. But, it's one of those things where it's so important to what we do, is really just kind of getting our story out A lot of it is just storytelling and telling people about who we are and what we do. And then on the other side of that, I spend a lot of my time just in product development. So I work actually very closely with Ian. He and I work quite a bit. A good example is our the cask partners that we've worked with for our Virginia Highland Whiskey. We work with our port finishing, a lot of local Virginia wineries right now. We work with Veritas, King Family, Stinson. We're starting to work with Wisdom Oak a little bit, and up north Paradise Springs. So we work with a lot of different partners, which is really cool for us. I love that sort of very Virginia focused collaboration across just people in the adult beverage industry.
Sure.
So we
like
also
bouncing ideas off
exactly
each other.
And we do this barrel exchange, so we'll make whiskey and then we'll they get our barrel and they get to kind of use the influences of our whiskey in their product, and then we'll take that barrel back.
I love that.
So it's been really fun, and it's a great way to for us it just is really fun. We work with Potters up in Free Union for cider finished whiskey. They're great. And the whiskey is like fabulous. We just worked with Grace Estate in Paradise Springs on a Chardonnay finished whiskey, so it's a lot of fun for us to just be able to kind of work with these partners. And we're always sort of exploring different flavor profiles and kind of what does one barrel do to the whiskey versus another. So Ian and I both have to, unfortunately, taste a lot of whiskey.
make sure
everything's on track. And that's really actually a team-wide effort. We engage, and we've got some people here that have fabulous palates. And so we really lean on the team as a whole to help us kind of develop the whiskey. We work with Nancy Fraley, who's an international nosing and spirits expert. As well.
Job.
Yeah. So she's been really helpful in just kind of giving us just the educational component of like, hey, this is, along with our own palettes, but just kind of having a backup and for her to have some part of the process has been really, for me, it's been really interesting.
Makes
sure. So as I mentioned, quality of product is really critical for us. We see it as kind of a kind of the backbone of the brand, along with just the experience component. So
absolutely. And you mentioned story, and that is such an important part of getting your brand and your business out there. And it was interesting, you mentioned Boston, Chicago, like these other markets. You're definitely going to slightly alter your story a little bit from the way you would tell it here in Virginia, because we live in Virginia.
Right.
We know Virginia. So you're not going to like hammer home,
right,
the rolling hills of the Blue Ridge.
Right. Exactly.
And blah, blah,
yeah,
blah. But in Boston, you might do that.
Yep.
I've got relatives in Boston, and they come visit and they're amazed at how beautiful it is. They don't, they didn't know. And so it's very interesting how your brand might be tweaked just a touch depending on your audience.
Yeah.
And who you're pushing it toward.
Exactly. Yeah.
And you're headed to New Orleans. Mm-hmm. For Taste of the Cocktail, New Orleans. Now, I'm curious, what's the story that you're going to be pushing down there?
Yeah. Well, I think we always kind of have our common thread of just who we are, kind of the DNA of who we are. And I think the story really changes based on, obviously, our audience and who we're talking to, but really bringing Virginia to those markets.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think about New Orleans, it's, we're specifically focused on just kind of the cocktail element and really working with industry, advocates, bartenders, a lot of people that are users of our whiskey, and they kind of work for us, and just, and they're actually a big part of us telling our story.
Oh, totally.
So we will, it's a great opportunity for us just to kind of get in front of those types of, kind of industry members to tell the story about Virginia Distillery Company and why our whiskey is amazing.
Right.
But it's also, I think we look at Virginia as a whole too. There's been a lot of work with the Virginia Distillers Association in kind of, putting Virginia as a whole in the national limelight a bit more. It's as the industry is growing, we're getting a lot of new members, and I know we work with Virginia Distillers Association quite a bit. So it's kind of we do our part to help grow our individual brand, but we really look at it as also helping to support Virginia spirits as a whole, and that's really important to us. So,
terrific, and that, because that is an emerging thing. I mean, it's here, it's been here, but it's not well known outside the state, I don't think.
Yeah. So that's one of our, we think with kind of what we're doing in the just our ability to really be kind of a driver for Virginia spirits and help kind of tell our story. And also the product that we're making here is American Single Malt. It's a, kind of a newer category that's still sort of formalizing. But we're really just very focused on it being something that we put a lot of time and energy into. And that's actually here the stills running behind us. That's what we're making every day. So and that's another component of being at Tales of the Cocktail. Our CEO, Gareth, is going to be on a panel to talk about American Single Malt in front of a whole bunch of industry and media. So that's important for us just to kind of get the word out. And we did win, Best American Single Malt this year by World Whiskies Award.
Yeah, I was going to mention that. That's huge.
It is huge. I mean, we were like, oh, we love our product. So it was really nice to be able to get that. That was from Whiskey Magazine. So for them to give us that was really quite special.
And so early.
Yeah, like, exactly. Yeah.
And I'll admit, my friend Kendra works for you guys, and she's like, Janae, you got to taste this. I'm working for them now. And in my head, I'm thinking, okay, how good can it be? I mean, because it's new. It's right. Virginia. It's new. I've been to all over Scotland, blah, blah, blah. It's awesome.
Oh, thank you.
It's really good.
Yeah.
And the cocktails you guys make with it here are especially creative. Your bartending team, are any of them going with you to Tales?
Yeah,
are you
actually
taking some of your recipes or?
Yeah. So Amanda, who I know you've met before, she actually has a fabulous palate. We lean on her quite a bit through our sensory, but she's been instrumental in developing the cocktail programming here.
Oh, they're so good.
Yeah, thank you. And we've had to be a little bit creative because of the laws that we have in place around what we're able to showcase at our visitor center. So it is specifically tied to Virginia state law, which means we can only showcase our own product in the cocktail. So it means that we, by virtue of that, we have to be creative because we're not able to use other spirits that you would naturally use. Like in a classic Manhattan, you might be, working with, sweet or dry vermouth. There's a couple other supporting spirits. So we look at what we do here at the Visitor Center as a part of what we're able to do in the larger market. So that's been, so I think Tales will be nice too to kind of see the in other markets, how do those cocktails work? Because it is, work with a very unique set of regulations here in Virginia.
Interesting, because you have that, you're so regulated and limited that it forces you to get creative with what you could
do. Exactly. Yeah.
So how, for a classic Manhattan, how would the VDC version of it be? Like, how would you tweak it?
I mean, I think we like to kind of do our own little riff on the signatures. So for here, specifically, we'd have to be a little bit more creative with kind of incorporating a little bit of what could potentially substitute for those pieces. But yeah, it's. I think we've done a good job with just the overall program.
And you're limited by amount too, right? Because it's a tasting room. Because I know I've been to a couple of events, and you just get like a little. You can get a flight, but it's like a little taste of it. It's not like a full cocktail.
Correct. Yeah. So that's again. So by Virginia law under the we actually are allowed to serve 3 ounces per person per day.
Okay.
So no more.
Okay.
So guests can come in and select a flight of up to 3 ounces, and that's kind of how we've done our menu, is a flight of three, and then we serve cocktails that have an ounce and a half in them. So you can kind of mix and match if you want to maximize your 3 ounces. We're always looking for, kind of that balance between being able to work within the laws here in Virginia, but mm-hmm. also as we look at other states and sort of how they run their regulation, I think there's definitely opportunity
yeah.
in Virginia, and that's kind of based on the
there's
ABC
a lot of
laws.
Voices.
Exactly, yeah.
That would like to
yeah.
see some of the laws change, yeah. including
yeah.
me.
Yeah, yeah. So there, I mean, we have been through VDA, the Virginia Distillers Association, they've been working with ABC. So every year we've actually gotten a little bit more, we were able to serve full-size cocktails as of July 1st, 2016.
Oh, cool.
So that was something, it was like, oh, great. We said that was something we wanted.
Yeah.
We're able to kind of get that through. And even on the, because there's some things that are done by legislation versus sort of administration,
mm-hmm.
administrative code through Virginia ABC. But, we're getting there. It's, the balance is always, let's, kind of make it great for both sides and really keep pushing the industry forward, knowing that the state is there's goals in place for that as well, so
right
yeah we're always
right.
sort of balanced.
Well, and you can buy here, when I visited last, a gentleman purchased a beautiful gift basket. It had like a rose gold colored shaker mm-hmm. and a bottle of the whiskey. I mean, just gorgeous.
Yeah.
Their glassware and shakers and things are so pretty.
Yeah, thank you.
and you can buy it here and take it with you, yep. just like at a winery.
Yep. Yep.
And you're in the ABC stores, I'm assuming,
yep.
here in Virginia.
Yep.
I've seen it.
Yep. Yeah, and I will say, so actually the reason why we're able to sell here on site is we are technically an ABC store. So that's how we're licensed.
Oh.
Yeah. Yep. So that's so that a lot you, of people don't know that, but that's...
I didn't know
yeah,
that.
Yeah. So that was because we manufacture, they give us the ability to sell on site, but we function like an ABC store. So we have to file reports with ABC. It's pretty much the same setup. It's just a different experience. So we really lean
yeah.
on the experience and the educational components here at the distillery, and really kind of leaning on that to help people get an understanding about who we are, as well as our product.
Yeah. You guys do a good job with that. I just, with the current climate of the country, I've noticed, I've walked into restaurants and stores and everybody is so upset and mad and curt and brusque. And every time I come here, everybody's so welcoming and friendly, and they are very focused on your experience. And the tour is wonderful
yeah.
because it teaches folks that, I mean, you're not just showing up and throwing back shots.
Right.
It's
exactly.
Like,
yes.
Let's learn
yeah.
where this came from and how it
yep.
got its start and the process.
Yeah.
How did that come about, the tour? Like, whose idea was it? What, we need to do this and how?
Yeah. So we, I mentioned Maggie Moore, who's our chief experience officer. So her and Gareth, they're married. So they're really, kind of the vision behind the visitor center and the programs that we have there. And they had, back before construction had started, they were in Kentucky at the Bourbon Trail. And they really just thought, hey, we can do this in Virginia and we can do it better.
Mm-hmm.
So I've worked with both of them to get the tour program up and running. We actually call it the Virginia Whiskey Experience.
Yes.
Which we love because it kind of gives
yes.
people, why are we unique? Why are, Virginia whiskey is, what makes it appealing and how do we teach people about what it is and the sort of historical components. So we worked actually with a professional museum design agency to get our whiskey museum
Whoa.
Up. Yeah, so that was actually Kendra.
Oh,
our
yeah.
good friend Kendra helped with that effort as well between her and I will tell you, generating that content. Oh, poor thing. I felt bad for her. We were able to incorporate, I think it was important for us to not just sit people down in front of a screen, to have it be very interactive. I think because of that focus on experience and education, we thought that tour guide is critical people because that sort of gives personality
yes.
to the tour. And then incorporating.
So they don't just glaze over.
Exactly.
Like,
yeah.
Okay, can we get through this so
exactly.
I can get my drink?
Exactly. Yeah. And so I'm sure you've been on tours where you're like, yeah. oh, wow, it was totally scripted and there was no real energy or passion.
Yeah.
And I think that's really what Amanda and the team that we have has really been really great about in terms of just getting people energized about what we do here. Even
totally.
When we get people on the distillery floor, I know everybody on the distillery team is, they love kind of the engagement that they're able to have with guests coming through as people ask questions.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, for us, it was important for people to kind of see the behind the scenes with being
yes.
able to see whiskey making in action,
yes.
Take them to our cask house where they can kind of take in the smell mm-hmm. of whiskey aging, which is very powerful. It's probably one of the reasons that people are so happy around here all the time.
You walk in and you're like, whoa.
Yeah, it's
really
pretty
nice.
Incredible. So it's important for us. And those are the things you can talk about, but you really can't, when people, I will say, I've seen, you know, you've like tell people all these things and like, oh, that sounds amazing. And then when they get here, it's like, oh, it's like the light bulb goes off and it's mm-hmm. like, I see what you guys are doing here. This is incredible.
Yes.
So, yeah.
And none of it is hidden. Like, it's almost like an open kitchen. I mean, the distillery process is right here in front of you as you drive in. The cask house is here. You get to see a little bit behind the curtain. And I love the use of the words experience mm-hmm. and guest. Like, from the beginning, it gives you a little bit of a different mindset. You're not just running party buses in and
exactly.
out all day long.
Yeah. It's really important for us that we give people an education on something that they may not be familiar with or something that they maybe are extremely familiar with based on kind of their whiskey knowledge, but we never, I would say we would treat somebody who had zero experience with whiskey the same
mm-hmm.
way. We
mm-hmm.
would treat somebody who, you know, has been to Scotland many times, and we just sort of change, you know, kind of the what educational points we can kind of impart. But it has been fun, I think, to see people who really just, they're like, oh, you know, I drink wine or I drink beer. I've never really thought about spirits before. But to see kind of some of the similarities in those, kind of the experience
yes.
component, especially with wine, I feel like there's a lot of crossover between just aromatics and sort of the sensory component and really getting an understanding for, wow, this whiskey was made on this property.
Mm-hmm.
So as we look to kind of release our everything that we age here on site, that's going to be really, really key because it's the influence of Virginia's climate is critical on what we're doing here. And that's really kind of the driver for why, you know, we're kind of focused on just, you know, kind of the temperature and the different climates everything that
there's
really
terroir.
Influences. Exactly, yeah.
And like a farm, you're affected by the climate.
Right.
You know, it's incredible.
Yeah.
Do you ever get customers who drive up and think they know it all and try and teach you guys?
Yeah, I mean, there's always, you know, and that's, I guess, the scale of the people that we see are people
yeah.
who have never, you know, as I said, never had whiskey before, people who've been drinking it for years. And, you know, we definitely, you know, we don't know it all either. So we like to take those gems and sort of file them away and kind of use
yeah.
them, throughout our own kind of talking points, but there's definitely things. I mean, it's a huge, there's so much to learn about, you know, spirits and as just in general, there's so much of it, produced, throughout the world.
Yes.
And so really getting an understanding of kind of the world, whiskeys and kind of what's out there, but also as it relates to what we're doing here with American Single Malt. It's
yeah.
just there's so much learning that goes on, and I find even, you know, I'm involved in it every day, and every day I'm like, oh, wow, that's cool. You know, I'm still
sure.
learning quite a bit. So I think that's important to never think that you know it all, I think is you know, keep your mind open
yeah.
and just say, oh, cool. You know, I didn't realize that, or I'll look into that. And we do,
yeah.
we've gotten some really great, just inputs from some guests. It's like, oh yeah, you know, you guys do a great job, you know, oh, look this up, or yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So it's, we kind of take those and we hope that it'll just add to the experience for somebody else down the road. So,
yeah. And I bet you learn stuff at Tales of the Cocktail too.
Yes. Yeah.
All the
yeah.
networking and
Yeah. It's a great experience, I think, for our team just to get out there and kind of be a part of the larger conversation, I think nationally, 'cause it is, a lot of industry, you know, people coming into town, see what other, you know, whiskey brands are up to, but really have that conversation directly with the people who help, you know, kind of be advocates for us.
Yeah.
It's important that it's like, oh, cool, you know, to really understand their experiences and kind of what, you know, what people are looking for when they come into a bar, you know, mm-hmm. kind of what, it's always important for us to just be mindful of, you know, obviously how people are drinking our whiskey and all that. So, it's always interesting. There's always something to think about. And, I really, it's like just being open to, you know, these different experiences that people have, you know, whether it's here on site or it's, you know, it's a, you know, a cocktail bar up in Boston or wherever it is, I think it's important for us to just be open to that and then say, okay, cool. Well, you know, there's so many great uses for our whiskey.
Exactly. Exactly. And I don't want to end the conversation without talking a little bit about the origins of the distillery.
Sure.
And Gareth and his family.
Mm-hmm.
How did all of this begin?
So Gareth's father, Dr. George D. Moore, he actually was a native Irishman, and he had come over from Ireland back in the 70s, and he was somebody who was just an entrepreneurial spirit is the best way to put it, and he really you know, was able to make make some really great business advances in technology, and but he loved Virginia. It was kind of his newfound home. So as much as he loved his native Ireland, he really just took to Virginia and raised his family here. And really, in a lot of ways, he would say he was more Virginian than he was Irish. So, and he, you know, like a lot of people, you know, this part of the area was a bit like sort of reminded him of parts of Ireland.
I can
so
see that.
Yeah. So I think just his connection to, and he actually was also an avid single malt drinker. He had quite the collection, and he really loved just the industry and sort of learning about the various whiskeys. So sort of taking his two loves, Virginia and single malts, and putting them together. So
nice.
But he was instrumental in kind of moving the distillery forward. Unfortunately, he passed away, and so Gareth and his wife Maggie took up the reins in his honor. So we really
wonderful.
See that we're you know, hopefully making George proud.
So, I think so.
Yeah. So it's been a great journey to be part of. As I said, I came on in March of 2015. It's very fast moving. I think the passion and the dedication that the Moores have for this, and just, you know, they work very hard at it. So it's, as we all do, just kind of keeping the dream moving forward and being able to just, I think we're all excited for that day when we get to have our own 100% produced American single malt.
And remind me, is it 2019?
2019 is what we're looking at. Yeah, hopefully the spring of 2019.
Oh, it's on my calendar.
Yeah.
I remember the year. I'm like, I think it's spring. I'm not sure. I will be here.
Okay, good. Good.
I'll be the first one through the door with my glass, like, held aloft. Like, pour me a shot. Dram.
Yeah.
Pour me a wee dram.
See, that's right.
Well, this has been fantastic.
Yeah.
It's nice to get, like, the distillery, like, the distiller's point of view, but then, like, the distillery story from you. How about a couple fun speed round questions to end up? Do you have a favorite junk food vice?
Oh, good Lord. Pretty much anything with bread is like, I can't literally, and my husband is, I mentioned he likes to cook. He's a fabulous baker as well. So,
oh my God, he makes bread too.
He can produce pretzel rolls literally on demand, which is a problem. It's a huge problem for me.
Oh
so,
my God.
Like, honey, I really, gosh, would love some pretzel rolls. And like an hour and a half later, there they are. It's
oh
terrible.
My God.
Yeah. It's bread is definitely.
You won the lottery.
I know, man. I really
Asabuco
did.
And
I know.
That's
yep.
great.
Yeah.
I'm feeling like some bread, honey.
That's
what do you think?
Yeah. It's the good and the bad of it. So
exactly.
Like, we're gonna have to control this bread thing because it's, but it's, but yeah, anything, you know, bread based, pizza. is pretty much my, it's always been my weakest point.
So. Oh my God. And you're so close to Dr. Ho's too.
Yeah, that's exactly.
The Bellissima. Yeah. That's my jam. Yeah. I love that stuff. Now, do you get into town? Do you live in town?
Oh, yeah. I lived in Charlottesville for about a year and a half. So we're actually down in Nellie'sford. We live at basically the base of Wintergreen. We're in Stony Creek. So, yeah, it's beautiful.
I was going to ask your Bodo's order, but you might not get to Bodo's that often.
Not anymore. But when I used to, it would be, not super boring, but they have that, I guess, the everything whole wheat, I think they still had that. And then it would just be ham and egg sandwich. So I lived in Manhattan for a couple years, and of course they're ham, egg and cheese sandwiches. You can get them on any quarter on a hard roll, and that was like that's also a really big problem for me, is the ham, egg and cheese sandwiches. So Bodo's was a nice replacement for that.
I love those bodega sandwiches. They are so good. My husband introduced me to those. If you could take a road trip, this one I just came up with. If you could get in a car right now and drive to a city to eat in this country, where would you go?
Lord. Oh, there's so many good ones. There's two answers to that. I guess there's the place that I've never been that I would go, and then the place that I've been that I would go back to.
Good answer.
So I would say my husband and I lived in the Pacific Northwest for about 8 years. Portland, Oregon has some ridiculous, ridiculous food that we still crave all the time.
My husband just went there. Yeah. I should have talked to you. Yeah. What are the good restaurants up there that you miss?
There's one that we love called Nostrana, which was like, it's sort of Italian inspired, but it's, there's just so many of them that are just, I think what's nice, it's very like the sort of local whore movement. But then you combine that with the wines from the Willamette Valley, and that's pretty much it for me. So, and then I know that there's so many, great food scenes, places I haven't been. I just went to Chicago for the first time, like a few months ago. And I was like, it's crazy that I'd never really spent time there.
Yeah.
But I feel like it was interesting because it wasn't necessarily what I expected, but actually in a very good way. And it seems like there's a lot of really great, restaurants and and it's definitely a city for whiskey. So I'm excited that we're selling there now because I get to, and there's a direct flight from Charlottesville to Chicago now. So
my husband was on the first one. They gave him free breakfast.
Oh, wow. Look at that.
He texted. He's like, I'm on the first direct flight. I didn't even know.
That's awesome. Yeah.
I need to get up there more too. Yeah. I did like Girl and the Goat.
Yes,
like
exactly.
Stephanie Izzard's place.
Yep. That was on my list the last time. And there's so many places that I'm like, gosh, I just got to get to. And so
I'm thinking maybe with the distillery, you'll be traveling there more often than not now.
Yeah, exactly. That's so very cool. As we go and kind of, spread the VDC word.
Oh my God, in New Orleans.
Yes.
Hello.
Yes, exactly. I know I was going to say it's not going to be a good week of eating in the sense of if I'm trying to be healthy.
No.
It's going to be excellent for otherwise, just enjoying some great food and cocktails.
Okay. Are you vegetarian or no?
I actually don't eat beef.
Okay.
But I do, fish and chicken and that kind of thing. But try and be pretty vegetable based.
Well, there goes my suggestions for New Orleans. Coop's has amazing jambalaya.
Oh, okay.
And it's a very divey place right
Coop's.
There.
Okay.
Coop's. It's called Coop's Place.
Okay.
Best I've ever had.
Okay.
And it's like a hole in the wall. Great Bloody Marys, too.
Oh, good.
So you can go
for
the Bloody Marys.
Okay. That sounds like that's going to have to happen.
Yeah.
So.
And Cushone's good, but I don't know that he's got vegetables. It's mostly pig and pork.
Yeah. Which I could do a little bit. I just have to, meter it out.
Do you know what John Besh's place in the Hilton, it's called Borneo.
Okay.
They have good fish.
Okay.
Really good fish
cool.
dishes there. And it's very low-key, casual. You don't have to dress up or anything.
Cool.
We hit that place a couple of times. Yeah. So there's three for you.
Cool. Awesome.
Right. And I always end with this one to keep it community-focused. Who in the food or beverage world should I talk with next in this region?
I have a little bit of an obsession with La Saint up in Charlottesville. It's the kind of a speakeasy under Tavern and Grocery on, I think it's West Main. Oh my God, they do ridiculous cocktails.
Really?
The team there is great. What I love about them is they make everything very approachable. So again, it's like, it's kind of our approach where it's like, hey, you could know nothing or everything, mm-hmm. and you're still going to get a great experience. But the team there, Patrick and Carrie and everybody that's involved, they are, I mean, their cocktails are ridiculous. So
I need to go there.
Yeah, it's the one thing. We moved down here closer to the distillery about a year ago, and I'm like, I just don't get up there as much as I like to, mm-hmm. as much as I used to. But whenever I'm in town and they're open, yeah, that's pretty much where.
Kendra
I'm at.
Recommended La Saint
to
me.
Yeah.
Okay, that's okay. Date night.
Yes.
Need to go.
They're great. So it's if you go in through the main entrance at Tavern and Grocery. And if you look straight back, you'll see a light. So I think if it's green, it means, because it's a smaller space, it's underneath.
Gotcha.
But if it's green, it's kind of like a speakeasy. So it's kind of, first come, first serve. If it's green, I think it means they've got room. If it's red, you have to wait a little bit. I think that's the right colors. I'm always very excited to get downstairs.
Yeah.
But yeah, they do a
great
job.
That's a thing now. Because I know they tried to do that above Fellini's at one point. Mm-hmm. And now Brasserie has their little secret. I'm like, oh my God.
I know. It's
Prohibition.
I know.
Distillery.
There it is.
There's
exactly.
There's our callback. That's kind of what we started with. Oh, good job, Janae.
Yeah, good job.
Thank you so much for talking with me.
This has been fun.
Yeah.
Thanks for letting us chat about Virginia Distillery Company and everything we're up to.
Man, absolutely. All right. Cheers, everybody.
Good stuff, right? I'll admit, whiskey is a personal passion of mine, so I completely geeked out on this episode. Some episodes I'm there to learn because I don't know a lot about it. And I know, especially with Ian, he and I just went to town and totally geeked out on all things whiskey because it is something very near and dear to my heart. I may have even poured myself a wee dram of the Virginia Distillery Company whiskey while I was editing. And I urge you to get to the distillery company in Lovingston this summer, this fall, at any time. Take the tour. It's fantastic. Sit out on the patio. Enjoy some cocktails. They really do a great job there with their cocktails. There's always a food truck. They are doing something called a whiskey tiki here this summer, where they are inventing tiki drinks with the Virginia Distillery Company whiskey. That sounds like a ton of fun. I will definitely be headed out for that. Join the club, join the Cass Society, get a few friends together, go to Gearhart's and get the whiskey-infused chocolates, enjoy all the things that the distillery company is doing these days for Nelson County and for our region with regard to spirits. And thank you so much for being my guest here today. As always, here at Audacious, we appreciate you. We are very grateful for your patronage. Next up, the boys from JM Stock Provisions. I'm talking with Jake Bushing about his wine adventures and his new foray into creating his own wine. Also in talks with the Croxtons of Rappahannock Oyster. Have you been to Miroir? Have you been to Rock Salt? Have you been to Rappahannock? These guys are conquering the world and teaching everyone about the wondrous thing that are Virginia oysters and Chesapeake Bay oysters. So look for those episodes here in the coming weeks. You can find me at iTunes. The website's audacious.co. Send me your comments. Submit a review. Thank you to my sponsors, Teej.fm, and my lovely sponsors at patreon.com/audaciouspod. For as little as $1 a month, you can ensure that Audacious stays solvent and gets ever closer to that podcast truck. That is my dream. So I can take this out on the road. We can take Audacious out on the road and learn even more stories about food in our region. Until next time, I'm Janae Libby of Audacious Food Talk for Gluttons. I'm loquacious, ferocious, gracious. And when it comes to learning about food and keeping those community connections going, I'm audacious, and I hope you are too. Big love, guys. Big love. See you next time.